Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Now in depth on why so many of us think our tax system is unfair. President Trump is unveiling part of his plan for reforming the federal tax system today, and you can expect to hear about a cut in corporate taxes and a method for simplifying personal income taxes. Any action from Congress, though, will be months in the making. But here's a question for the president. Can Trump do anything about the fact that a majority of Americans believe our tax system is unfair? When the Pew Research Center recently asked Americans to rate the fairness of the federal tax system, 56% said it was unfair. That's the highest it's been since March of 1997. By the way, that crosses political lines, too. So is the tax system unfair, or do we just dislike sending hard-earned money to the federal government? Today, two guests on what it would take to turn that public opinion around, and your views, too, really important to the conversation this morning. If you think our federal tax system is unfair, tell me one thing that proves your point. I'm asking you to call in with perhaps a specific example out of your own experience. Do you think the amount of taxes you pay is about right? So I want to know about how you feel about the amount of taxes you pay, and give me some specifics on why you believe, if you agree, that the federal tax system is unfair. Here's the number, 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. I'm on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Carolyn Bruckner is one of our guests. She's Managing Director of American University's School of Business, and she's with us today from Washington. Carolyn, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Joseph Thorndike is with us. He's Director of the Tax History Project, and he's with us from Charlottesville, Virginia. And Joseph, welcome to you. Good to have you on the show.
Hey. It's great to be here.
Carolyn, I saw those high unfair numbers on the Pew survey, and I wondered, is this really just more of our rising distrust of government institutions, or do you think there is something specific to the tax system that creates that much perception of unfairness?
You know, I think that there might be a little bit something there. When I was preparing to come on the show, I went out and did some research. I read the Pew report, and then I went and looked at some government reports that had been prepared on how much corporations pay in terms of corporate taxes. And the Senate Budget Committee last year commissioned a report from the U.S. Government Accountability Office on corporate tax income. And the findings of the report, which were released in March of 2016 to Senator Sanders, who is the ranking member on the Budget Committee, were pretty surprising. And, you know, one of the very top line findings was that among large corporations who had more than $10 million in assets, of those large corporations who had financial statements that reported a profit, about 19.5% paid no federal income tax.
Wow.
And there are good reasons for that. They could be taking advantage of previous losses to offset their current year income. There could be depreciation, investments in certain assets that they're expensing. There could be very legitimate reasons in the tax code. But that overall perception, I'm sure, played into the narrative that Senator Sanders has been promoting both on the campaign trail in the run-up to the 2016 election and today, that there's something wrong with our corporate tax system.
Joseph, I find this really interesting because, as you know, one of the top factions of this new tax plan, this is something President Obama talked about as well, is cutting corporate taxes. So here we have perhaps, and actually I think we see this in the Pew survey, Americans saying corporations don't pay their fair share. And then we've got one of the lead items here is a cut in corporate taxes. How do we reconcile that?
Well, you know, this is going to be a pretty heavy lift, I think, for the Trump administration and for Republicans more generally, because corporate tax reform is actually, in my view at least, necessary. You know, the U.S. has a very high statutory rate on corporate income, much higher than other nations. And so bringing it down makes sense. But the problem is that's politically tenuous, right? I mean, because as we know, Americans are sort of plagued by the sense that, and this shows up, I think, in that Pew study, that somebody's not paying their fair share. And that somebody is often corporations. Whether that's true or not, as you say, it's a perception issue. And the last time we did a really big tax reform in 1986, uh-huh. it's striking that corporations really paid the bill for that, you know?
Huh.
There were a lot of rate cuts, and actually we kind of stuck it to the corporations in trying to balance the books.
This time around,
it doesn't seem to be going that way.
Joseph, I didn't know that. Be specific on what you mean by that. We raised taxes on corporations so we could cut income taxes,
well,
personal taxes, or what?
We actually lowered the rates, but by eliminating a lot of the preferences, people call loopholes in the corporate tax, we actually collected a lot more money from corporations as a result of the 86 tax reform. At the same time, we cut marginal rates for individuals. So sort of, you know, the political pitch on it was, hey, we're going to simplify the system and we're going to cut rates. But we did that mostly at the individual level, and we actually asked corporations to sort of take one for the team.
Carolyn, as you noted, 62% of Americans say they're bothered a lot by the idea that some corporations don't pay their fair share. Can both things be true, that some corporations are taxed too high and that they might onshore more of their profits and they might create more jobs if they weren't paying that level of taxes? And can it also be true that a lot of them don't pay their fair share?
Absolutely. And a lot of this comes down to what industry a corporation's operating in. We see a much higher rate of tax payment and tax compliance, generally with corporations that are regularly subject to audit. But in those industries that have hard assets, so in the oil and gas industries versus industries that have a lot of intellectual property where they can move their assets all around the world and cherry pick the tax jurisdictions in which they operate.
Right.
We see that they tend to have lower effective tax rates versus the industries that can't really move where their operations are because they're operating in the oil and gas industry, for example, or in other types of industries that are actually domestically located because of where the assets or their production is actually happening.
I see. Let's hear from some taxpayers, shall we? To Ben in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Ben, how are you thinking about this?
Well, I just did my taxes, so I'm a little grumpy, as can be expected.
Okay.
But I lived in Europe. I lived in Germany specifically. And the two things that I took away from that experience was, one, you pay a lot of taxes to live in Germany. And then every day you get to see and feel the benefits. The roads are awesome. The schools are awesome. You know, things are run well. And then the second point is, when you pay taxes there, you're just told what you owe. I resent that I have to pay to figure out what I owe so that I can pay.
You mean in the U.S.?
Yeah, in the U.S.
Yeah.
It's incumbent on me as a taxpayer to figure out what I owe the federal government.
You're really happier.
Having the IRS give me a bill.
I mean, you're really happier with the German state saying, you know, no way around it. This is your bill for the year.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I hate the rigmarole of doing taxes, and that adds another level of resentment.
Joseph, what do you make of that?
Well, you know, the tax filing process is really irritating for a lot of people, and it could be easier, at least for people with sort of simple financial lives. You know, people who work for a living, have got a regular job, what they have is really wage income. For those sorts of people, we could actually make the tax system work more fluidly so that there was not such a difficult process of filing. We could have the IRS send out, for instance, a tax return that had, you know, sort of provisional numbers. Here's what we think you owe. And then you could look it over and say, yeah, looks right to me, and send it back. But we don't have that now. We rely on the taxpayer to gather all that information and send it in.
Call here from Sarah in Hutchinson, Minnesota. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I was wondering why we don't simply have a flat tax so that those who make more money pay more into the system, but not more percentage-wise. And then cut out all the loopholes, because if I have a lot of money, I can afford a very good lawyer who can get me out of paying because he knows of all the loopholes.
Uh-huh.
And that seems to be unfair.
Ah, Carolyn, the return of the flat tax. It seems to come up about every 5 or 6 years, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it does. And I've actually heard Joe speak about this as a tax historian. Whenever the American population has had a chance to evaluate this, it hasn't gone so well, because ultimately there's a sense that it's not progressive in the idea that those at the lower income, those in the lower income stratas, 15% of their income is much more to them if you're earning only $20,000 a year versus if you're earning $2 million a year. And that's why the American population on the whole, they recognize that 15% to different income stratas actually means different things to those populations.
Joe, would you weigh in on that?
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, over the decades, surveys have shown a fair amount of support for a progressive rate structure with richer people actually paying at a higher percentage. But it's not a hugely higher percentage that you find support for either. So some graduation in the rate structure strikes most people as fair, which is why I think we've had a graduated rate structure for more than 100 years now. The question is really where you put those numbers, and there's no easy way to figure that out, right? I mean, basically, it's a show of hands is how we decide what's fair. Some people think that taxing the very rich and would be reasonable at, say, 70 or 80%. Other people think those numbers should be sort of below 50% or below 40%. So that's what the argument is about. But the notion of progressivity of a progressive rate system is generally pretty well tolerated in American politics.
Joe, I wonder if you think that most Americans understand that while low-income earners pay less money in federal taxes, many of them end up paying a larger percentage of their income in state and local taxes. If we're going to talk about fairness, that doesn't really seem fair to me. Do a lot of Americans understand that?
You know, that's hard to say. I think probably no. There's, you know, surveys are showing less resentment about the poor paying their fair share than they used to. That whole question of non-payers used to be a really big deal. Like when Mitt Romney was running, those numbers seem to be declining. But the important fact, as you say, is that there are other taxes at play here, not just the income tax. So if they're not paying federal income taxes, they may well be paying lots of taxes at the state and local level, including property taxes, which are really hated by people. And they're also paying Social Security taxes. And for many Americans, they pay more in Social Security tax than they do in the income tax. And that's a significant fact, too.
This is a conversation, if you've just gotten in on it, with Joseph Thorndike from the Tax History Project and Carolyn Bruckner from American University's School of Business. We're taking note of a recent survey by the Pew Research Center that says a lot of Americans believe that our tax system is unfair. I'm asking you this morning, and I actually having this conversation on the day that the White House is going to reveal some details of the kind of tax reform they want to try to push through Congress. I do want to caution that's going to take months and months, because that is really complicated, and you're probably getting a sense of it right now from our guests. But we're talking about this and trying to get at the bottom of why a fair number of Americans believe our tax system should be simpler and it should be fair. So tell me this morning what it is about our tax system that seems unfair to you, if indeed you agree with that. And do you think the amount of taxes you pay is right, is about right? I haven't heard anybody on the phone lines on this, getting some good tweets on it. But 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 to Laura in Eden Prairie. Hi, Laura.
Hi. My question is about the, you know, when it comes to fairness, I wonder if anybody has studied and come out with, you know, so many percentages are thrown around. This one, there is often the argument that the wealthy pay, you know, let's just say the top 1% pays 50% of taxes. But if they own 90% of the wealth, well, they're not paying their fair share. And I feel like that is something that should be known, studied, and but I've never heard any kind of percentages or research that was done around that.
Carolyn, can you speak to that?
Absolutely. I think that those kind of studies are done by the Joint Committee on Tax, which is the bipartisan congressional committee that's responsible for evaluating different parts of tax legislation. And they're going to be key moving forward in the tax reform debate, because they're going to be the ones that are going to put a price tag on any tax plan that moves forward. And as part of calculating how much revenue loss there's going to be with a given tax plan, they have internal models that look at effective tax rates for individuals in each of the different income brackets. And then also you can go online, and the IRS has a great website that details statistics of income and what individuals actually pay in terms of taxes and whether they be Schedule C filers or corporations. And that information is readily available through the IRS's statistics of income website.
That is a really – I've never heard of that resource. So the information you can get there is – on average, if you make $75,000 and you're a family of whatever, you can kind of get a sense in comparison.
You got to dig, but that information is available. You can also look at different reports that the Congressional Budget Office puts out, as well as different analysis that the Joint Committee on Tax is going to put out. They write letters to members of Congress saying, hey, if you support, because members of Congress request assessments on how different tax policies are going to affect different income brackets, and they publish those letters on their website. Wow. You just got to go dig.
Tiffany says on Twitter, I agree with the caller. My taxes are generally simple. Shocked 2 months after filing with an $800 bill for income not declared, I'd paid off a debt in a lump sum. It's too complicated. I did use filing software also. Andrew says here, following up, it seems that most think a higher tax rate means all income tax at that. Had a guy tell me he turned down a raise due to the brackets. Joseph, I don't think we understand the brackets very well. Could you give us some clarity on that?
Yeah, I mean, you hear that kind of story a lot, but I personally would never turn down a raise because it would move me to a higher bracket, because I'm going to take back some of that money.
Exactly.
At least, right?
You are going to gain something in that, right?
Right. I mean, you may not get enough, right? And there is some point at which, you know, in World War II, the top rate reached 94%. So if you got a raise and you were already in that top bracket, every dollar that they gave you in that raise, you're only going to take home 6 cents.
Wow.
That may not be enough to give up, you know, working your weekends in the new job. But for most people, that's just not the situation that they're in. And our top rates are nothing close to that. So in reality, I can't really imagine the situation a normal person would ever find themselves in where a raise is going to hurt them. That's just not how progressive brackets work.
A call here from Nathan in Cottage Grove. Hi, Nathan.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 28. I work in banking, and I'm a little concerned about our national debt with regards to taxes. With the debt growing as it is and the ever-raising debt ceiling, it seems like what we currently pay in taxes is kind of arbitrary. I'm wondering if it might be more appropriate for us to follow more European austerity that's gone on in the last few years.
I really love this question because, and I'm going to put it to both of you, Joseph and Carolyn, because the Treasury Secretary today is already brushing off questions and concerns about tax cuts raising the national debt. And he's saying things like, we'll grow our way out of it. Joseph, what does history tell us about big tax cuts, perhaps during the Reagan administration and the George W. Bush administration, on what happens to the debt?
Well, tax cuts can produce new growth, and that can reduce the cost of those tax cuts. But it's not going to pay for those tax cuts. What history makes really abundantly clear is that tax cuts are tax cuts. They cost the government revenue, and it's just a question of how much. You know, I think that reasonable people can disagree about how dangerous a given level of national debt is. And actually, what you see now is that it's not even totally a partisan issue. You know, it tends to be the party out of power is very concerned about debt, and the party in power doesn't really care. And I think we see that going on right now. But, you know, the question really should be, we have to be honest with ourselves about what a tax cut is going to cost. And many of the proposals that seem to are likely to show up today from the Trump administration are going to be very expensive. The Tax Foundation, which is a pretty conservative think tank in D.C., released some estimates saying, you know, even with optimistic growth assumptions, we're still not going to pay for this whole thing, you know, with growth.
Carolyn, how much do you think average taxpayers ought to worry about what this means to the national debt when they're assessing, you know, these income tax or these overall tax reform proposals?
I think this is a really big issue, and I think everyone is underselling how important it is. I worked on the Hill during the Budget Control Act debates of 2011. I was there when there was the government shutdown of 2013. I've looked at the budget numbers. We're looking at, you know, a budget debt, a national debt of $20 trillion. We have an annual deficit, which is a shortfall in the amount of money we spend versus the amount of revenues we take in. Just this year, that's going to be $559 billion. And on top of that, you can't forget that our demographics are such that we have an aging population. The boomers are aging and retiring, and as they age, they get more and more expensive. That puts more pressure on the programs that we have to help that generation age, the Social Security programs, the Medicare programs. These are really important things. And, you know, when I think about how, when I look at our tax revenue picture, knowing that we have an annual deficit, and we're looking at potentially Trump's plan based on, you know, just reported estimates of how much it could cost, could be just the corporate tax cut piece of it, could be $2 trillion. That's incredibly expensive, particularly when you think about the fact that we can't outrun our demographics. And that's just the corporate piece, right? Like, that doesn't even account for how much we would need to cut to make it a politically viable proposal. Because you can't just cut the corporate side and get it through Congress. You got to do something on the individual side, too.
So Carolyn, what you just said leads me to ask you what you think about enlarging the deduction, the standard deduction. That's something that I think is going to be in this proposal. But what they probably don't want to talk too much about is some of the other deductions, like mortgage interest deduction, that they want to get rid of. I mean, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think that everyone would say, absolutely, I want a standard deduction. I know that I have health care insurance, but I still had tons of out-of-pocket expenses because I've got two young kids for health care expenses. But because the deduction, the itemized deduction, you have to reach a certain threshold before you can take advantage of it, I wasn't able to take advantage of it for my out-of-pocket medical expenses this year. But I could take the standard deduction, and that was good, and a more generous deduction would be great. But at the same time, when I think about this in my own personal experience, I have two parents that get Medicare. I have two kids in daycare, one of whom is going to start public school next year. Mm-hmm. If it means that I get a tax cut personally this year, is that going to have ramifications for the Medicare for my parents or public school funding for my kid? I got to think about these things holistically.
I think you think about them in a way that, because of what you do and what you know, that probably a lot of us wouldn't. I think a lot of us are focused on, that's going to help me with those child care expenses.
Right.
And you know what? The federal government's been arguing about Medicare forever. They'll figure it out.
I think that's definitely an approach that most people want to take when it comes to tax policy. They just want to pay their taxes and move on because it's such a painful process. I did a survey of folks who are self-employed, and on average, they spent 10 to 35 hours preparing their taxes for the 2015 tax year. That's time that you could be spent earning money, income. And, you know, that's when I see that kind of level of complexity for people that really aren't earning that much money, that's really troublesome to me. So people just want to pay their taxes and move on. But the reality is, as a society, we have to make choices in what we're going to spend our money on, and we can't outrun our demographics and our aging population.
As Stephanie says, clean water, clean air, roads, bridges, education, remember what our taxes pay for. Then she adds, I'd pay more to support this for all, to Amanda in Minneapolis. Amanda, what are you thinking about?
Well, you know, I think something that hasn't really been mentioned that's incredibly important is that our dollar used to take us a lot further than it does now. And, you know, and the inflation and the cost of just living and having a home and buying groceries and just going through your daily life is immensely more expensive. And the amount of money that people are making when we talk about minimum wage just hasn't gone up.
You know, this is something, Joseph. Yeah. Thanks for the call, man. It's a good one. And Joseph, I was thinking about this. Do tax cuts for the middle class, federal tax cuts, make that big of a difference if middle income workers haven't really been seeing, as Amanda notes, their incomes go up much?
Well, I mean, I suppose they help on some level, but she really puts her finger on some of the bigger issues at play here. You know, I'm a tax guy, so I'm inclined to think that taxes matter, but in many ways, taxes are not that important to most people. What really matters more is what's happening to their wages, and there's been a long period of slow and stagnant wage growth for a lot of Americans, and that, when you're looking for the economic pain that Americans are really in, it's not because their taxes are so heavy. And in fact, as globally speaking, as one of your callers pointed out, other countries tax their people much more heavily. The issue here is that our incomes for many people are not really keeping pace. And that's put a squeeze, especially on the middle class, that I think is really painful. I think it helps explain why Donald Trump is president and why Bernie Sanders was very popular last year.
Carolyn, I wonder if you see any indication that that's turning around, that companies are responding. I see a lot of hiring signs. I wonder if that means that companies are having to pay more to bring people in the door.
I think what's happening is, rather than having companies hire more people, people are starting their own businesses and working on the side. There was a study that came out last year that said people in non-traditional employment relationships, meaning they were, you know, doing independent contract work or working for themselves, that the number of those people from 2005 to 2015 has grown by 66%.
Wow.
That means that people are working more to get by with the same amount.
Wow.
Because of the wage stagnation that Joe pointed out earlier. And that just means more trouble when it comes to tax time, because you're earning income on the side and you don't necessarily have the withholding that you would have from a regular employer for payroll taxes or income taxes. And so then you got to go figure it out on your own. And that's really where we get to the heart of the complexity for the lower to middle income workers that are doing more jobs just to get by.
Jamie says on Twitter, yes to the complexity of self-employed taxes, tried to use the form for estimated taxes, ended up frustrated and giving up, and I'm a college grad. And Shane says, the how are we going to pay for it question raises a deeper question. Do we have a revenue problem or a spending problem? Conversation continues here. If you've just gotten in, on this day when the Trump administration is going to unveil some of the details of their tax reform plan that will take a while to work its way through Congress, we're examining some of the ideas at the core of that plan, but also asking kind of a larger philosophical question that the Pew Research Center went out recently and polled on, which is, why do so many Americans believe that our tax system is unfair? Is it unfair in many cases? And then I'm curious about whether you think the amount of taxes that you pay, federal, state, local, is about right. What would you change? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. If you're hanging out, you're online, you're following the conversation, you can always tweet me. It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. Back in just a minute now with the latest news now from Phil. And what are you watching this hour, Phil?
Well, it's taxes, Carrie. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin says President Trump's tax plan will amount to, in Mnuchin's words, the biggest tax cut and the largest tax reform in U.S. history. Mnuchin gave that description during a speech in Washington this morning. The White House is set to release the broad outlines of his proposed overhaul later today. President Trump took to Twitter in reaction to a federal judge's ruling that knocked down his immigration order, calling the decision ridiculous. A day after a judge issued a decision to block the president's order to withhold funding from so-called sanctuary cities that do not cooperate with U.S. immigration officials, Trump said he would take his fight to the highest court, tweeting, "See you in the Supreme Court." North Korea will no longer host this year's Judo World Championships because of security risks amid rising tensions with South Korea and the U.S. The International Judo Federation says this situation is alarming and the outcomes are difficult to predict. President Trump has called all 100 U.S. senators to a meeting today about North Korea. Republican lawmakers are meeting on Capitol Hill today to consider how to rescue their drive to repeal Obamacare. Leading House conservatives are saying good things about a plan to revive the GOP health care replacement bill, but it remains to be seen whether moderate House Republicans can go along. All of this comes as lawmakers from both parties are trying to agree on a separate $1 trillion spending bill that would prevent a partial government shutdown coming up on Saturday. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 9:36.
Later on All Things Considered, U.S. senators are called to the White House for a briefing on North Korea, and the man convicted of shooting the Jamar Clark demonstrators in North Minneapolis is sentenced. I'm Tom Cran. Join me for those stories and all the day's news starting at 3.
What are many of you listening to on the podcast? Well, it might be that conversation I had yesterday with the economics editor at Breitbart. Started out talking about one thing, ended up talking about Breitbart. You can hear it all on my podcast. Find it wherever you get your podcast, NPR News with Kerry Miller.
I'm Tom Weber. Join me at 11 when I'll speak with a researcher studying the effect of prison on the children of inmates. And I'll visit with Dudley Riggs, who founded a theater so many years ago that pioneered a new type of stagecraft, improvisation, a show all made up on the spot, which came in for some criticism.
It showed lack of respect for the great literature and the great playwrights.
All of that at 11.
Programming is supported by the Shakopee Mattawakutan Sioux community, which has committed $10 million over 4 years to improve the nutrition of Native Americans through its Seeds of Native Health campaign. Learn more at seedsofnativehealth.org.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the University of Minnesota School of Nursing, driven to improve quality of life for people living with Alzheimer's disease and the people who care for them. Learn more at nursing.umn.edu.
Your letters near the top of the hour here. In the meantime, we continue our conversation about taxes. Carolyn Bruckner with us from American University School of Business and Joseph Thorndike with us from the Tax History Project. Carolyn, I'm hearing from some younger taxpayers here who, as Elise asks, I'm a millennial. I pay Social Security. Will Social Security even exist when the time comes to need it? And then Shakia adds, if Social Security is unavailable, will I still be forced to pay into Social Security? I actually hear some real anxiety there from them.
I think that those are legitimate questions to ask. And as policymakers are going to have to wrestle with the solvency of our social safety network, right, and those programs. And Social Security, as it is now, is funded right now, but, you know, along with the rest of our federal budget, it's facing some important pressures that are the result of our aging demographics. Millennials are paying into Social Security, and it's going to come down to whether or not policymakers can make tough decisions on the aging boomers or millennials in terms of who's going to pay the ultimate price for the reforms that are needed for Social Security.
Joseph, Deb in Crystal Lake, Illinois, says property taxes are missing from this discussion. And you and I kind of mentioned them and then we moved on. She says, as a person in Chicagoland, property taxes are a killer. Even though she lives a fairly debt-free life, clipping coupons, being frugal, despite taxes being high, the local roads are terrible. I think this is interesting because we have such a direct connection with our property taxes, right? Can we see the results of them? What can you say about property taxes and whether many people think they're fair?
Well, there's all sorts of interesting things about property taxes, and I think the first and most important is that people hate them. They always rank first on the list of worst taxes.
Oh, really?
In fact, there was a book about property taxes a decade ago or so called The Worst Tax. you know, that being said, they, you know, they're also, as you say, very close to us. You know, they finance things around us, like our school systems. And so, you know, we actually have a very tight connection with them. One of the things that I think that makes them problematic for people is that they're not being paid out of a liquid asset, right? You know, we're valuing the house,
right,
and then you have to pay some property tax on that, but you got to come up with cash for that. You
right.
can't give them a piece of the house. or not usually. So that, I think, is at the root of all, of why a lot of people dislike those taxes. And also, you know, where they're sort of arbitrary in the sense that someone walks by your house and looks at it and says, oh, I think it's worth X. And then they value another house. And those numbers are available, generally speaking. They're publicly available. You can compare with your neighbors. That just creates sort of a fraught situation, I think.
You know, Carolyn, this gets back to what I was asking earlier about if you're on the lower income scale here, you may pay fewer federal taxes, but you might be getting hit big time through property taxes and some of these other local taxes. You don't hear politicians talking that often about that.
You don't. And what another group of taxes that we really need to emphasize are the payroll taxes that the millennial was really concerned about. You know, payroll taxes come out if there's withholding directly out of your paycheck. And that, in many instances, can be more of the total tax liability you pay to the federal government. And because there's withholding from your employer and it's paid directly to the IRS from your paycheck, you never get that money. And I think that more so than income taxes, payroll taxes for lower-income people can be some of the highest taxes that they pay.
Wow. Yeah, Trevor says here on Twitter, it's not just federal income tax. If people added up all the dollars they pay in taxes, property, sales, state, gas, that's right, they'd be surprised. To the phones to Jesse in Forest Lake. Hi, Jesse. Appreciate you waiting.
Hi there. Hey. Good morning. Yeah, thanks for I got a few things I wanted to say if you got just a minute. But, I think of the tax on the rich and corporate tax as kind of like a sin tax. It's easy to pass because the minority, like myself, aren't rich. And it's easy to say, well, these guys are rich. Let's tax the heck.
Yeah.
It's almost like you're penalizing people for working hard and being successful. I'm a business owner. I just had a sales tax audit. Last Monday, I had a work comp audit.
Uh-huh.
Of course, we have our property taxes. I used to be a councilman in a town that had a declining population. But all 4 years that I was on council, every member, every city member employee would get a raise. We'd get our new tractors. The taxes would go up for the residents.
Uh-huh.
It just seems like every tax agency wants more.
Yeah.
And I wish you could just tell the government, I don't like the way you spend my money, and I'm working real hard to get it. And sometimes you'll have employees, you know, that I'll have employees, they're faced with overtime. Sometimes they don't want it because it's going to raise them up in a higher bracket. And of course, it's cynical, but they'll say, well, I'm just going to pay more in taxes anyways, which is true.
Yeah.
And it seems like the tail wags the dog and everybody wants to take it from the rich. But there's a lot of us out there working hard to try to be rich. And it seems like the deck stacks against you, as Mr. Trump would say, you know.
Yeah,
and
Carolyn, Jesse, thanks so much for the call. Carolyn, I think a lot of what he was saying is reflected in this Pew survey that we were reading.
Yeah, I think that there is a lot of frustration on behalf of small business owners. So I run a tax policy center at American University that focuses on tax issues exclusive to small businesses and entrepreneurs.
Uh-huh.
And small businesses, like that last caller, you know, they have a real frustration because they pay taxes on their business income at ordinary rates. And when the fiscal cliff occurred in 2012, the ordinary rates for those in the highest income brackets actually went up to 39.6%. And so small businesses, the really successful ones, which, you know, that's 31% of small businesses earn on average $450,000 a year. They suddenly got a tax increase up to 39.6% of the highest amount of income that they're earning.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of real frustration out there on behalf of, you know, wealthy small business owners on that they got a tax hit and nobody else did.
Joe, we have another small business owner here. So listen to him and then I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Hi, Brad.
Mm-hmm.
Good to have you on the line.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. And yes, I'm calling exactly about this. I mean, one of my issues as a small business owner, and I've been in retail and e-commerce for the last 20-some years, where inventory is counted as profit. So as I grow my business, and if I'm making, say, if I made just easy numbers, if I made $100,000 in the business, I'm paying myself a salary, well, that $100,000 in the business isn't necessarily cash in the business. That's just profits waiting to, oh, I just get a distribution.
I see.
It could be sitting in inventory.
Uh-huh.
Inventory that's in the business, and I've had up to 85 employees. Well, then I have to pay those as an S-Corp or an LLC. You then get taxed. Of course, it passes through to the owner, and I owe taxes on that as if I've made $100,000 or $1 million, whatever it is. costs in the business as profit. So it's been really frustrating, and I am a very socially liberal person, and it's almost embarrassing how little I'm able to give away to charity because I have to save up for taxes because there's profit in my business.
So
I do think there is some legitimacy to the effect of if we cut these business taxes, that, yes, then someone like me is able to give more to these charities that are getting cut by the government. And believe me, I'm a socially liberal person here in South Minneapolis.
So Joe, do you see items in the tax plan, you know, some of the previewing that we've been seeing that would address what we've just heard from our two business owners?
Well, definitely. So there's a lot of talk about reducing the corporate rate to 15%, which would be a really dramatic reduction. What maybe has not gotten quite as much, although I think it's about to get a whole lot, is what seems to be part of the plan, which would cut the rate for pass-throughs also to 15%. Now, that would be quite a dramatic change, and not without problems, right?
Joe, can I ask you to explain what pass-throughs are?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. A pass-through is an entity that doesn't really matter for tax purposes. Any income that it earns gets passed on through to the owners of that entity.
Okay.
So, you know, as your previous caller just said, he had an LLC, and the money that LLC flows through the organization untaxed and arrives at his door, and he has to pay personal income tax rates on that. And when those are very high, that really does create a difficult situation because that means that business is being taxed at a much higher rate than, say, a corporate business, generally speaking. So the Trump plan looks like it's going to try to do something about that by lowering the rates paid by owners of pass-through entities. But the problem with that is that that's going to give people a lot of incentive to set up these LLCs and channel as much of their income as possible through the LLCs so it pays this new super low rate rather than taking like a regular salary.
Yeah, Carolyn, where do you see some of the problems there?
I mean, I think that the biggest problem with those plans are the political ones that are going to stem from how much revenue loss that each of these proposals are going to generate. I mean, when the Tax Policy Center out of the Urban Institute and Brookings Institution evaluated the tax plan that had the 15% corporate tax rate and the pass-through tax rate at 15%, it showed that it was a $6 trillion revenue loss.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a lot of money. And so if you move forward with those kinds of rate cuts, fine. But what else are you going to cut to make up for that revenue shortfall? Is there even enough in the overall tax code to cut to try to compensate for that revenue loss? And yeah, you can say, well, our growth is going to make up for it. But, you know, as Joe pointed out at the top of the hour, even the Tax Foundation has said it's not clear that these kind of tax cuts can generate enough growth that these tax cuts will pay for themselves.
We got a call from John in McGregor who is talking about this. He says the concerns of small business owners are legitimate, but we need to acknowledge that there are many businesses that pretend to be small or act as pass-throughs to get around the system. Joe, is that true?
Yeah, that's definitely true. Pass-through is not equal to small business, although many small businesses are pass-through entities. It's complicated. And again, what we don't want to do is create the opportunity for tax avoidance, you know, new opportunities. And that happens especially when you have big rate differentials. If you're taxing individual income at 39%, but you're taxing pass-through income at 15%, then everybody's going to try to turn one sort of income into the other.
Right.
That's how you create problems in the tax system.
Right. Rich says on Twitter, my partner went to a tax conference yesterday, 500 plus attendees. The question was asked, and no one thought 15% for corporations would be passed. Carolyn, do you think it'll be passed? Do you think that rate is where we'll end up?
If I'm a betting person, no.
Too expensive.
It's way too expensive. And I know that the Joint Committee on Tax just yesterday sent a revenue estimate to Speaker Ryan at a corporate tax rate cut down to 20%, and that was about $489 billion. That's still incredibly expensive. And the number of tax loopholes that they're going to have to close to offset that, to, you know, minimize the budget impact, that's going to be pretty painful all the way around.
I mean, that's political trouble, Joseph, right? When you try to one person's loophole is another person's reason for supporting in Congress, right? Some kind of tax measure. I mean, they're going to cross a lot of members of Congress with this.
Right. And you can make that work, at least in theory, right? That's what they did in 1986. They got rid of a lot of loopholes, but they lowered the rates. It was a bargain that lots of people could live with.
Uh-huh.
The question is whether that's even vaguely possible now. And in 86, they weren't trying to do a tax cut. They were just trying to keep everything even, you know.
Oh.
Revenue was held steady throughout. So that made that actually makes it a little bit harder, because you can't just give things to people. You have to actually pay for them. And the question I think we're going to confront now, going through into this new tax reform episode, is are we going to try to do this, and how much are we prepared to lose in the process? And then, you know, what do we do about the debt? Are we going to cut spending to deal with that? These are really important questions. And I think that the callers who've mentioned Social Security, and Carolyn mentioned Medicare as well, in many ways, these spending programs are really the issue here,
mm-hmm.
because we got to find a way going forward to pay the bills. And tax cuts are nice, but even if we didn't cut taxes, we are nowhere close to paying the bills. So that's really the elephant in the room here, is how much these entitlement programs cost and whether we really want them. I mean, generally speaking, Americans say they do want them. So there's the puzzle.
So and in the midst of this news at this hour, that the Treasury Secretary is promising the biggest tax cut in history. So a call here from Lisa in Rochester. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for waiting.
Yes, thank you. I just have a question for your caller.
Sure.
Regarding payroll taxes. It seems like the more overtime you work, the more they take out. And if that is true, you know, how are middle class, lower income class people supposed to get ahead when they're taxing overtime at a higher rate than regular pay?
Carolyn, is that true?
I think that I did a study last year on self-employed workers, and I talked to a number of folks that were really concerned about how much they were paying in payroll taxes, and I found just a general frustration across the board. And I will say that this is not an issue that has bubbled its way up that I've seen into the national debate over tax reform. And I think it's something that members of Congress should consider, because you can't just talk about income tax cuts with respect to trying to ease the tax burden on the middle class without recognizing that payroll taxes are a significant burden. Yet at the same time, we have these obligations to our aging population through Social Security and all these other important programs that those payroll taxes fund. We should be talking about this.
You know, Joe, I think I got a sense from you, from what you just said, about why this is going to be so complicated to try to get something through Congress. Carolyn, I'd love to hear you on this. For what you think Congress can tolerate when it and again, with all of this added in about the way we spend on entitlement programs and how the value that Americans put on that, what can President Trump really do on tax reform?
I think he's really going to be hamstrung by the math. I think Congress, you know, for all of the Republicans' work on tax reform, having put out a blueprint and put out some proposals to actually pay for their tax cuts that have already, you know, run into some political headwinds, I think that the budget math is really, really hard. And just looking at what's already happened in the past 6 months, look at what happened to the health care reform effort.
Right.
When the Congressional Budget Office put out a letter saying 24 million people were going to lose health care insurance. What is going to happen to a tax reform plan when the Congressional Budget Office or the Joint Committee on Tax puts out a letter that says this is tax cut disproportionately benefits this population and it's going to cost $2 trillion in lost revenue?
But does that mean we are destined to live with the complexity that we live with, too? Because then there will be no simplifying, will there?
You know what I see is happening in terms of the simplification arena? I see the private sector developing different models and tools to ease simplification concerns. So I asked my students to write a memo for extra credit on the top five apps that could help small businesses track their expenses. And I got 30 different memos.
Really?
Dozens of different apps.
Wow.
You see how, and millennials in particular, are jumping on the bandwagon of having the opportunity and ease of being able to track their expenses through using an app. And you see that technology is changing the way that we can track our expenses, document our expenses for tax compliance purposes. And I think that there's been like a lot of movement in that area to help with the complexity of, you know, those of us with the simplest of tax returns and simplest of small businesses. It's a different question for, you know, those businesses that have $10 million in revenues, but I definitely see technology as being helpful.
You know, Carolyn, really grateful for all the clarity and the expertise that you brought to the conversation. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Carolyn Bruckner from American University School of Business. And Joe, thank you very much. Good to have the historical perspective, too, and your analysis on this.
Thanks. It was great to hear.
Joe Thorndike is director of the Tax History Project, a tax analyst.